This week's podcast is a special interview with the Bishop of Bristol, Mike Hill. Last week, he wrote a blog expressing concern about the numbers of young people who say they've accessed pornography online. His blog stirred up a lot of interest with, amongst others, the Radio 4 Sunday programme picking up the story last weekend. In this week's podcast, he talks about the issue and also talks about the challenges his family are facing at the moment as his wife has treatment for cancer for a second time. But first, I started by asking him why he'd written last week's blog.
I'm the father of four daughters, so I've always been, I suppose, I have one son as well, I should add, but I've always tried to think hard as a parent and now as a grandparent about, you know, the kind of context in which our young people are more likely to find well-being than less likely to find it. And naturally, one of the things that came into the frame on that was the whole issue of pornography and how the kind of new technology has made that much more readily available to anybody who wants to go and look at it. And then I saw this at research, and it showed that there'd been a kind of 7% spike in recent years on 11 to 13-year-old girls who were claiming emotional problems. And then, I think as you probably know, just a couple of days ago, Alison Pearson, writing in the Daily Telegraph, picked up on that. And, I mean, I think it is a huge area of concern for parents, and speaking as a grandparent, for grandparents as well. We just think that, I think in general, that our children need to be protected from these things. And while it exists on the web in any form, I mean, I am told that, you know, most young people can easily program their way around parental controls and all that stuff. And, you know, apparently hardcore pornography is two or three clicks away on a mouse.
I thought it was an interesting line that you wrote in your blog, where you said that the idea of keeping pornography away from children while it's fine for adults is, well, you said, doomed to failure morally and practically. Can you expand on that a bit?
I think the issue of whether pornography is a moral good or a moral evil is something that, in a society which is particularly nervous about anything that reeks of censorship, very nervous to kind of face up to. So what I was trying to do was to say, look, there is an issue with the morality of all pornography, but while there is pornography for so-called consenting adults, don't be fooled into thinking that children will not access it online. In other words, I was raising the stakes a bit. I was saying this is a moral issue for all people and not just for our young people.
It does seem, though. I mean, I'm the mother of three teenage daughters, and they all have phones, which you try to teach them because you don't want to restrict what they do in life, and obviously you can't shield them from everything.
Well,
but how do you pull it back?
I think that's a very interesting assumption when you say you don't want to restrict them. I mean, I'd have thought that, and just because I think this doesn't mean it's right, but I would have thought that part of the skill of parenting teenagers is to work out what you really do need to restrict and the things that you can let go by as part of that natural exploration of adolescence. I think that's got, and I think my article refers to this, I think that's got much harder for parents these days because of all this, the immediacy of this new technology, social networking. I mean, I think it's Alison Pearson who points out in her article in the Telegraph that a lot of young girls' well-being is actually now tagged to how many likes they get on social internet, how many kind of, you know, messages with hearts they get on. And of course, the reverse must be true, that if they're getting people who dislike it or people who, you know, then start to send horrible messages, their well-being is, you know, undermined by it. So I think what I'd want to say is, where it gets very difficult, and this is why social media is particularly difficult, is you don't want to kind of socially penalize your children by taking a phone away from them or saying you will not, you know, have an account on Instagram or Facebook or Twitter or any of these things. I mean, I just don't think that can work anymore. And I agree with you on that, if that's what you're saying.
So how do you think then that, you know, if you, obviously, as you've said, you've got grandchildren, so it's something you're thinking about with them. But what do you think parents should be thinking about?
Well, I think that it's not just parents. I mean, I think internet providers need to be taking some responsibility. I think that education is important. I mean, I was really shocked when I listened to the Sunday program on Sunday morning last, when a so-called expert, you know, proclaimed confidently that there is no evidence that pornography does anybody any harm. I mean, I don't think most parents think that, and I also think that it just doesn't ring true with our experience. I mean, bottom line is, I have, you know, I've got friends, I've spoken to people, women mainly, it needs to be said, who have, I think, otherwise thought they've had perfectly satisfactory sex lives, and suddenly their husband has, you know, arrived in the bedroom replete with all kinds of weird ideas and things that he'd like to spice up their sex life with, which these women have felt very uncomfortable with. And, I mean, work it out, you know, where they get these ideas from. I think the internet provides education. I think that, I remember this, that when my daughter was a social worker in Essex, one of the last things she dealt with before she went off to have some children was whether or not children who are allowed to sit and watch pornography with their parents on a Saturday and Sunday evening should be taken into care. I mean, that's where apparently some families have got to with this. That cannot be helpful, can it? I mean, I'm not suggesting that we want to kind of try and turn back the clock to a sort of Victorian priggishness or anything like that, but what I think I am saying is somebody needs to shout out loud about what's happening here, and probably smarter people need to work out what we're going to do about it, because this will not lead to well-being in our children, and well-being in children, as I think many of us experience, means that well-being in adulthood becomes more of an issue.
What do you think then can be done now? What would you, you've talked about internet providers, you've talked about the community having a responsibility. What else do you think, what would you like to see happening?
I think that, I think there is a kind of adult who thinks this is just part of harmless adolescence. And, you know, my view would be somehow they need a wake-up call on that. I think there is education about the unhelpful effects of pornography in the minds of the young. I would argue also in the minds of those who are not so young, but I might be out on a limb with that one. But I just think that our failure to accept that pornography is a moral issue, and it's not just a moral issue for children, it's a moral issue for us all, is not helping us to deal with the problem. It is, I think, with some evidence, damaging our children. I think parents do have a role in this, although I can remember how agonizing I felt it was when I was a teenager when my mum or my dad tried to talk to me about sex. You know, I don't think parents find that easy, do they? But, I mean, again, it's about, I suppose it's about, that old-fashioned word, it's about your duty as a parent to try and do all you can. I mean, our schools will help as well, I would have thought, but certainly parents will play a key role in all of this. All this stuff now is at a different level, and because it's at a different level, sadly, the stakes are a lot higher in relation to the well-being of human beings. And I mean, there's a lot of other things I could talk to you about, you know, about the secularization of our children, about the ruthless commercial exploitation of them. You know, it'd be great, I think, if, you know, the NSPCC's done some great work on this. I believe the Mothers Union have done some work on this. I think there is a fundamental question, not just relating to pornography, and that is, you know, what do forces beyond influences, beyond parental influence, I think I made the point, I can't remember whether it was in the article you've referred to or another one then. I think when I was a kid, even though I didn't take much notice of my parents, I would say they had about 85% influence over me, and the other big influencing group was the peer group. And I just don't think it works like that anymore. I think as the influence of the peer group ratchets up through social media, the influence of parents goes down, and that's why I think parenting is really tough. That's why I think we need better support for parents. And you know, I'm sick of people of my age criticizing parents of your generation for not being strict enough. You know, that's too facile, too simple. So I want to try and play, I hope, my part as a grandparent in... I would not offer my advice without being asked for it. I think that becomes a bit painful for my children when I do that. But if they ask me, I will try and help them, you know, with the responsibility, because it is such a big responsibility now. And maximum respect to everybody who sets out on the route of parenthood. It's a great thing to do, but it's a really challenging thing to do with all these other influences on our children.
Now, can I ask you, sort of moving away from that topic, you're going through sort of quite personal trauma at the moment, with your wife being very unwell. Can you just sort of briefly explain what's happened?
So I think it was 2006. We had a horrendous road accident. She broke her neck in three places, hung on to life by a thread for a few days. Mercifully has made an amazing recovery. She'll never be fully recovered from that. Then 4 years ago, she got cancer for the first time, and 6 weeks ago, she got it for the second time, and a week ago, just took some surgery in our excellent local NHS hospital for the cancer, and is having a kind of slightly tricky convalescence, in that the antibiotics they gave her made her very sick, and... then she probably stopped taking the painkillers a bit too soon because of what, you know, the side effects of them, and so she's in a bit of pain right now. But it just feels like, you know, this poor woman has really gone through it in the last 7 or 8 years. And obviously when one's spouse goes through something, one goes through it with them. I stood by her side many times thinking, you know, why can't I take some of this pain for her? So that's where we are at the moment. We're going to the hospital this afternoon to get the histology on whatever they removed from her last week. And that will either be the end of it, or it will be another treatment plan that she'll have to endure.
This sounds like a really trite question, but I want to try and explore with you where God comes into this and whether your faith gets tested. I mean, asking a bishop that seems a bit odd, if I'm honest, but well, does this test your faith?
It has nothing but... I mean, if I started from the point that being a Christian was some kind of insurance policy about... you know, that kind of covers me for anything going wrong in my life. I would feel deeply let down, but that's not my starting point. My starting point is not that faith helps me avoid difficult things in life, but that faith helps me hang together when those difficult things happen. I mean, I can't remember who it was who said it now, but, you know, somebody said very wisely, it's not what happens to you in life, it's how you deal with it. And I have found my faith to be entirely supportive. I think my wife would say the same. I hope you wouldn't detect an ounce of bitterness in either of us. And on the whole, we think of ourselves as entirely blessed rather than entirely punished or anything like that. Though, funny enough, there is a bit of a Job in us all, I think. You know, I do remember after the car crash thinking of myself, you know, what, have I done something wrong here, Lord? You know, help me out, kind of thing. But that very quickly kind of dissipated, because if it came down to things we'd done wrong, we'd all be having car crashes, wouldn't we?
A lot of people would say, though, that people who don't have a faith, and I've had friends who've said this to me, that if there was a God, then he wouldn't allow suffering like this.
Yeah. Well, again, I think we deal with the world as it is, don't we? And I can't force anybody into having faith. All I can say is that the night that we had the car accident, I never forget this, we were with the consultant, and my eldest daughter, who actually is a senior nurse, said to him straight out, you know, is she going to last the night? And he said, well, the next 24 hours is going to be critical. So my family and I withdrew to the kind of relative's room in the ITU, and we prayed, and we started praying about midnight, and we stopped praying, I think, about, I can't remember how long we prayed for. It seemed like a long time, but I wouldn't want to over-exaggerate that. But this was my conviction at the end of that time of prayer, was that without knowing what would happen to Anthea, I think we all had this very strong assurance that if the very worst thing happened and she died, that we would be given the strength to carry on. And in the circumstances, that felt the best place to be, not the worst place to be. So we could have sat in the relative's room and had a massive discussion about why does God allow this stuff to happen. But where does that get you? It's not a question you can easily answer. Maybe a question that we'll have answered one day when we're in heaven. But right now, you know, it's a futile question that leads some people into unbelief. For me and my family, I think we will choose to trust God even in the toughest times of life, and the sure knowledge that whatever happens, somehow he'll see us through.
I noticed on your Twitter feed that since your wife started her treatment recently, you've been asking for people's prayers. Do you feel that's helped? Do you feel the strength of other people's prayer?
Yeah, I feel really... I felt strangely kind of... I've had a really good feeling through this last week, actually. I felt very positive. I felt very optimistic. As I say, I found it a bit frustrating because I'm not that good at care, and I do my best, and it... So the hardest thing has been, I think, my wife dealing with my fumbling efforts and me dealing with her clarification that some of my efforts are fumbling. So that's been challenging. But in terms of the bigger stuff, I'm almost looking forward to going to the hospital this afternoon to find out. We're pretty sure that the histology will be clean. So if it isn't, I'll call you back and... let you know, but the bottom line is, I think we would say, without any reservation or qualification, faith really helps you get through the difficult, the hard yards of life.
Have there been moments where you have been able to smile through this process?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think my family, one of the ways we deal with that, you know, I gather this is true of kind of caring professions in general, but you kind of develop this black humor kind of thing, you know, this sort of dark side. And so you make jokes out of the most ridiculous things, to be honest. And yeah, of course, we've smiled a lot, we've laughed a lot, we've had bizarre texting sessions where... I mean, I'll give you an example. My second daughter, Karis, who's got a great sense of humor, I just seen Anthea walk down off to the operating theater, and I'd send a text to my children saying it's going to be a long 3 hours. So my daughter, randomly, suddenly sent me this, I don't know where she got it from, it's a photograph of a rat dressed up as a mermaid, and said, maybe this will cheer you along, Dad. And I mean... I was feeling, you know, nobody likes to see a relative disappear to the operating theater. But, you know, part of the way you deal with this stuff is this sort of slightly bizarre humor. And so, yes, I've smiled. I've laughed. I don't think I've cried this time. I describe myself as a person who... didn't cry before I was 40 and haven't really stopped after I became 40, and my kids laugh at me, and I even cried in Naked Gun. So, we felt totally upheld by people's prayers.
And what of the future?
Sounds rather an extravagant thing to say, but I'm pretty fearless about the future, actually. I've got some anxieties. Of course, I have some anxieties in relation to my work. I've got some anxieties. Nobody wants to be told they're not well or anything like that. But I'm very confident that whatever happens to me, with by the grace of God, I'll deal with it.